Welcome to another edition of the aptly named Doomsday Podcast as the Cowboys reach the midpoint of a disastrous season, an epically disastrous season. Eagles win 23-9 to remain in first place in the hapless NFC East, moving into their bye week. Carson Wentz is the first quarterback with four turnovers to win by 14 points since Andy Dalton in 2013 for the Cincinnati Bengals against the Baltimore Ravens. Head coach Mike McCarthy and his Cowboys coaching staff obviously had no faith in rookie quarterback Ben DiNucci being able to play conventional offensive football in his first NFL start. Kellen Moore with a lot of offensive creativity for DiNucci. The opening possession included a double reverse to CeeDee Lamb, Ezekiel Elliott taking the direct snap in the Wildcat. In fact, before halftime, Moore had called a variety of strange plays, direct snapping to three different players, DiNucci, Ezekiel Elliott, and wide receiver Cedric Wilson, a quarterback, a wide receiver, and a running back. In fact, how about this statistical oddity? Cedric Wilson, a wide receiver, was sacked twice in this game. Twice by a wide receiver being sacked. The Cowboys' defense was finally not a liability. In fact, it was quite competitive. They forced four turnovers, as I mentioned, but still the Cowboys unable to score a single touchdown. The only touchdown scored when DiNucci was on the field was a fumble return for a clinching touchdown for the Eagles' defense when the Cowboys were approaching the goal line and entertaining the very idea of taking a late fourth quarter lead in Philly. Dallas has allowed an NFL-high 97 points off turnovers this season, including that fumble return for a touchdown. They've allowed at least 13 points off turnovers in six of their eight games this season. Worse still, they failed to score a touchdown in back-to-back games for the first time since the 2000-2001 season and for just the fourth time in franchise history. DiNucci struggled at just about everything against the Eagles. He was 0 for 9 on passes, thrown more than 10 yards down the field. He was 1 for 8 for 11 yards and two sacks on throws outside the pocket. He was 6 for 15 for 52 yards and four sacks when he was pressured. 1 for 5 for 14 yards on play-action passes. And get this, 1 for 4 for 5 yards, targeting the great Amari Cooper, the $100 million wide receiver, contributing a single catch for 5 yards. Look, nobody in the NFL has three quarterbacks or four offensive tackles capable of performing well. The offense, though, that was first in the league across the board with Dak Prescott has become the worst in the league in three starts from Dalton and DiNucci. Listen to this. Weeks 1 through 5 with Dak Prescott as the starting quarterback, the Cowboys averaged 32.6 points per game. In weeks 6 through 8 without Prescott, 7.3 points per game. In three games without Prescott, the Cowboys are 0-3. They've been outscored 86-22. They have one touchdown in 36 offensive possessions. Watching the Cowboys without Prescott reminds us of what a magnificent achievement it was for Doug Peterson to coach the Eagles to a Super Bowl title with his backup quarterback, Nick Foles, in 2017 and defeating Tom Brady and Bill Belichick in the big game at that. Look, DiNucci's skill set for all of the many descriptions we heard of him at the Star all week, where Stephen Jones made a Tony Romo reference. The players claimed he could sling it, had a lot of velocity and confidence. None of it was really ever evident in this game. But then again, you have to keep in mind he is a rookie, 7th round draft pick, 3rd on the depth chart, didn't expect to play at all his rookie season. By the way, did you happen to see Tua Tagovailoa, the 5th overall pick, make his first start in the NFL for the Miami Dolphins today? 93 yards passing, but the Dolphins won because they became the second team in the season with touchdowns on offense, defense, and special teams. Not so for the Cowboys, who could not score a touchdown in any of those three phases. The Cowboys have trailed by 14 or more points in 7 straight games, tying a franchise record set in 1961, their second year in existence. I'm surprised at how poorly DiNucci played, and even more so at the way Carson Wentz played. The quarterback who was most likely to beat the Eagles was Wentz, not DiNucci. How many interceptions would Trayvon Diggs have if he played against Wentz every week? The Cowboys went 208 passes between their first and second interceptions of the season. And then Diggs, the rookie, second round pick, intercepted Wentz twice in a span of just 9 throws. Unbelievable. Cowboys just unable to block the Eagles' front, which is third in the NFL in sacks. They still refuse to move all-pro guard Zach Martin to right tackle because it will force them to make 2 moves on the offensive line, and they don't want to be weakened inside. Makes no sense to me at this point. Ezekiel Elliott, 2-time NFL rushing champion, 0 games with 100 yards rushing as we reach the midpoint of Mike McCarthy's first season as head coach. Let's take a look at those records through 8 games for first season Cowboys head coaches. Only 2 have ever been worse. And by the way, they're the 2 greatest coaches in franchise history. 1960, Tom Landry, and 1989, Jimmy Johnson. In their first 8 games as head coach of the Cowboys, both went 0-8. Then Barry Switzer went 7-1. Chan Gailey went 5-3. Even Dave Campo went 3-5. Bill Parcells, 6-2. Wade Phillips, 7-1. Jason Garrett, 4-4. Mike McCarthy, hired because he had been to the playoffs 9 times in 13 years as head coach of the Packers and won a Super Bowl at Jerry World with a team that Jerry and Steven and the front office believe was capable of a long playoff run and possibly a Super Bowl title. They're at 2-6 with a variety of injuries responsible for holding them back. With quarterbacks other than Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers and Dak Prescott starting, McCarthy has a 6-14-1 record as a head coach. And the Cowboys are even worse when they don't have Tony Romo or Prescott over the last 15 seasons. Any quarterback other than those two, a combined 10-26 for the Dallas Cowboys. And the worst news of all, since 1990, when the playoff field was expanded to 112 teams, have started the season 2-6, as your Cowboys have now. And of those 112 teams, exactly none have made the playoffs. We have a very special show with a couple of special guests coming up, including my good friend Ron Jaworski, who quarterbacked the Philadelphia Eagles to the Super Bowl many, many years ago. We're going to have our usual segment with Glenn Stretch Smith. We might make the grades take a little different form because of the unique situation we face covering this horrible team. But that doesn't mean you can't have fun this football season, because winning season returns at MyBookie. MyBookie.com. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. Winning season means insane props, epic bonuses, and the craziest cross-sport wagers. At MyBookie, winning season means watching live sports and betting live sports all season long. Rejoice, the NFL has returned, and that means action-packed prizes on Sundays and huge cash wins. Get in on the action. Use promo code Doomsday. That's D-O-O-M-S-D-A-Y. And double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. Bet with the best this NFL season for your chance to win big. Use promo code Doomsday and double your first deposit. Your winning season begins today only at MyBookie. And now let's bring in another of my ESPN colleagues, again, a Philadelphia-based ESPN NFL colleague. Last week, Sal Palantonio, who covered the Cowboys game. And now, Ron Jaworski, who worked with me for a long time at ESPN, calling the Monday Night Football game for Westwood One, the first Eagles quarterback to ever lead the franchise to the Super Bowl. And Jaws, as a quarterback, I'm wondering, first of all, from a Cowboys point of view, what did you make of their approach to the game? It seemed very early on with all of the gimmick-type plays, the reverses, the wildcat, that Mike McCarthy was sending a signal right from the start that he didn't think they could win this game in a conventional way at quarterback.
Well, they couldn't win in a conventional way. Whenever you're going to start a quarterback in his first game as a rookie, seventh-round draft choice against one of the fierce pass-rushing teams in the NFL, in the Philadelphia Eagles, you've got to resort to the gimmick and gadget types of plays. The conventional progression just will not work. And I thought, particularly against a young, inexperienced quarterback, Jim Schwartz, the defensive coordinator, did a really good job. He mixed up his coverages between zone and man. He mixed up his blitz schemes. Some of the big plays that the Eagles defense made was on zero coverage, total blitz. So it was a real good mixture, and they did a good job of disguising, which you should do against a young, inexperienced quarterback, like Ben. I mean, that's just that's what you do. You mix it up. And so I thought the best way that Dallas could attack that would be with the gimmicks and gadgets and then get the running game going. And for a while, they did get the running game going, but not consistently enough.
What, I don't know what your expectations were of Ben DiNucci, or if you've seen him since he played in your general vicinity, college out there, at James Madison and high school nearby. But obviously a seventh round pick, like you said, Ryan Fitzpatrick was the last seventh round pick to start a quarterback as a rookie. That was 15 years ago. This kid had to do it with no training camp, no preseason games. How do you think he acquitted himself given that and the fact, like you said, he was up against one of the great good pass rush teams in football?
Yeah, I when you look at the full body of that, his performance, I thought it was good. It was kind of what I expected. You know, when you get a guy in this position, you know, the bright lights of Sunday night football against a really good defense, I thought he acquitted himself well. You could see some of the balls were sailing. You know, the thing you couldn't do if your Dallas was fall behind this game, which they did, and had to play catch up, then it became, you know, for three quarters, the Eagles were, you know, playing pretty much a base scheme. You know, once they got ahead in the ball game, they got after him, and then the exotic and designer blitzes really got in his face and started breaking him down a little bit. It's kind of what you expect of any young quarterback. If you're static and you can read the coverage, they're normally pretty good because you can see he's got a live arm, got good footwork, has a tendency to drop the throwing slot at times, and maybe the pass rush made him do that at times. But the inconsistency of the mechanics of playing position, you could see, just weren't there. And like you expect, the guy, he was expected to be a developmental quarterback this year. All of a sudden, here we are. He's starting as one of the really good defenses in the NFL in front of a national TV audience. So I thought overall he acquitted himself well, but certainly a long way to go to be a consistent winning quarterback.
How surprised are you at the way the Cowboys offense has fallen off the cliff without Dak Prescott? I mean, when they had Prescott, they were number one in the NFL across the board in offense. And now the last three games with Andy Dalton starting two and DiNucci starting this game against the Eagles, they've had one touchdown and I think 63 possessions. They've been held out without a touchdown consecutive games. Did you expect this precipitous a fall for the Cowboy offense?
And I did not. And I have kind of a saying, you know, it's never one thing. It's never one player. But clearly, you know, when Dak got hurt, the performance of this offense has just fallen off. And then you got to start, when you start digging deep on this and drilling down, you start looking at all the injuries they've had on the offensive line, the tight end position. You can see why there is this inconsistency right now. And, you know, Dak is a mobile guy, and he was able to get away from some of those pressures. He's a veteran quarterback. He was able to read the blitzes, get the ball out of his hand. It just kind of amazes me with, you know, with an Ezekiel Elliott, this trio of wide receivers that they have, that they can't be more consistent moving the football, because there's way too much talent for them to be performing the way they are. I think there's still a lot of talent on that offense. And I think when, you know, obviously you see a Martin get back into the day, they're getting movement on Fletcher Cox. They're establishing the line of scrimmage. Probably got a little bit too crazy with some of the gimmicks and gadgets. So I thought in that second half they were starting to establish some physical dominance by that Cowboy offense line. But then they went back to the gimmick play and lost 10 yards. And that kind of turned the game around, in my opinion. But, I still think right now the big hole for the Dallas Cowboys is that defense. Their defense was awful coming into the Eagles game. And I thought they played, you know, they played remarkable tonight, considering what I'd seen on tape, where they were just getting knocked off the ball and blown out. And, you know, I watched that Cleveland tape and I went, oh my God, this may be the worst, you know, rush defense in the NFL. And yet I think they acquitted themselves pretty well tonight.
You said something there was pretty interesting, in that you're right, the Cowboys do have three really good top end wide receivers. They've got a 2-time NFL rushing champion at running back who hasn't had a 100-yard rushing game yet. So what do you put that failure on? Is it just that the offensive line is so bad or not consistent enough to allow them to take advantage of those positions? Is it that the quarterback position is not strong enough without Dak Prescott, or is it coaching?
Well, I think after Dak went down, obviously, multiple changes took place. You don't have the same style of offense that you run with Dak Prescott when you even go to an Andy Dalton. And then when you go to Ben in this situation, DiNucci, you're not going to get a whole lot out of that. So You lose the audibles at the line of scrimmage where you could still use it with Andy, but when Dak went, you know, he's assimilated in this offense. You know, he knows how Kellen Moore wants it run. You can just see the offense was in sync. Now you start playing offense defensively because now you know your defense is really poor. So now you try to control the clock, stay out of the known passing situations. So you play a little bit defensively on offense. And, you know, with the wide receivers they had, I think it should be pedal to the metal. Get these guys the ball in space. Do some max pro. Take your shots down the field. There weren't too many of those opportunities against the Eagles.
So what has Dak demonstrated to you in his absence about how prolific a quarterback he is? Maybe he hasn't proven anything to you. Maybe you already thought he was one of the best quarterbacks in football. But I'm wondering how you view him differently now that you've seen what this team looks like without him.
Yeah, sometimes you don't realize how good you have it until you don't have it. And you can probably say that about Dak, you know. When you talk about quarterbacks, really any position, sometimes we talk too many about the flaws and the warts that people have. And then you forget about all the wonderful things they can do and the great talent they have. And I think people will appreciate, you know, the talent of Dak Prescott, the way that he went about his job, the way that he handled everything he did with professionalism, even his contract disputes and, you know, all the other things that go around the Dallas Cowboys. It's a hard team to play for because you're constantly under the microscope, not only locally, but nationally. So I think he's been the consummate professional. I think that people now see the Dallas Cowboys without Dak Prescott. They appreciate all that he brings to the table, not only as a quarterback, but as a leader and a decent man.
My last question to you, and I'm going to come from this point of view, which is watching the Cowboys or some other teams without their starting quarterback, it makes you marvel at what the Eagles accomplished a few years ago when they lost Carson Wentz, who at the time was an MVP-type candidate, and turned it over to Nick Foles, and Doug Peterson still led that team to a Super Bowl championship, and not just any Super Bowl championship, a Super Bowl championship winning with his backup quarterback against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady.
Yeah.
So, but given all of that, I kind of expected more out of Carson Wentz at this point in his career. Comes into the game tonight, and he was probably the greatest threat to the Eagles losing the game. He had four turnovers. Cowboys had only had three takeaways in seven previous games. What's your evaluation of where Carson Wentz is right now, and can the Eagles do anything if they get in the playoffs winning this division?
Well, not if your quarterback doesn't play better than Carson played in the first half today with, you know, two fumbles and two interceptions. And you just can't win turning the football over four times. The Eagles were -2 in the turnover takeaway category today and still won the football game. You know, that doesn't happen. You're going to lose 90% of the time when you're -2 in the turnover category. So clearly Carson has to elevate his game. He started off very slowly this season. He started getting some momentum again. But in the Cowboy game, he was holding on to the football. He wasn't making quick decisions, and he was inaccurate with his passing. And since I came in the NFL in 1973, the one thing has always stood out to me: you have to have repetitive accuracy, Ed. You can't have it 2 out of 3 times. To be a great quarterback in this league, you have to be accurate in that 90 percentile. And you can't miss guys when they're open. You can't throw interceptions when guys are open. Pinpoint accuracy, repetitive accuracy is critical. And, you know, you mentioned Nick Foles. You know, when Nick Foles took over for Carson in 17, the Eagles win the Super Bowl. You got to remember, Nick Foles had been around a number of years. He was the Eagles' quarterback. Then he left town. Then he came back to town. So, you know, he had been around a little bit, and he gained some experience. And, you know, he is a more mature quarterback. So, but you would think even with Carson now, this is his fifth season. And he's still making some of the mistakes that he almost didn't make in his rookie year. Maybe he was just too – you know, involved in what he was doing and maybe not smart enough to realize I'm a rookie and, you know, I was playing really good football. And I think he was probably thinking that mentality. And sometimes you can dwell on the mistakes that you make and the precision of which you want to run your offense and you get away from that. Sometimes you just got to pull the cork. You know, you take a bottle of champagne, shake it up, pull the cork, and let's go out and play and have some fun. I think he's losing a little bit of that.
Jaws, always great to talk football and specifically quarterbacks with you. You're one of the most knowledgeable analysts in the game, a great player in your time, and a wonderful friend you and Liz are to my wife Jill and I, and we're so appreciative of you taking the time to educate us on this game.
Anytime, Ed. Great to be with you, and give our love to Jill and be safe.
Thanks, Josh. Take care, buddy. Ron Jaworski, what a great man. I play in his golf tournament, a charity golf tournament for the Jaws Playbook Foundation every year up in Atlantic City. We have a great time. So always great to talk football with Ron Jaworski. You know what else goes really well with football? Miller Lite. Miller Lite is the original light beer. And they're celebrating 60 years of Cowboys football. I think earlier this copy said 60 years of Cowboys greatness, but let's not lie. The Cowboys have not had 60 years of greatness, and they're not great now. But the original light beer, Miller Lite, I think we can make that claim and feel good about it. So some people are stuck in a house with their roommates and partners. Others are back home with their family. Some are keeping their interactions strictly digital, as I'm doing with my good friend, Glenn Stretch Smith, who you're going to hear from in just a moment. Others have embraced hangouts outdoors at a safe distance. And when he's not interacting strictly digitally with me, I'm sure that Glenn Stretch Smith is out there with his boys, just out there outside, taking all kinds of chances. But anyway, Miller Lite has a 30-year partnership with the Dallas Cowboys dating back to 1991 when the team was still playing at Texas Stadium. And oh, by the way, I was covering them. And then I think Stretch may have been working for the club back then. So what do you call a group of grown men and women who get together every week, proudly wearing the star, to share a three-hour-long ritual of cheering, shouting, cursing at the TV, raising their Miller Lite, maybe throwing it through the old Panasonic now and then, while yelling about them boys? You call it Miller Time in Cowboys Nation 2020. But as the title sponsor of the iconic Thanksgiving Day game, Miller Lite and the Cowboys have produced a new holiday knitwear, sweaters, hats, and socks, proceeds to be donated to the Salvation Army. So this holiday season, Miller Lite celebrating yet again a unique occasion with Jerry Jones's iconic football team, a team for which Glenn Stretch Smith has worked as a scout. He's worked for it as an assistant football coach, and he's working them over right now as our analyst and the man who grades this squad. Look, this team's too bad, and the season's too far gone to break it down like we traditionally have and have Stretch evaluate each position and give grades. So we're just going to ask Stretch for some of his unique insight using his unique terminology to talk about the three phases of this team that we're most concerned about, which is offense, defense, and coaching. And I think we'll start with the offense, Stretch. Obviously, when you're starting three quarterbacks in a season, it's going to be a bad year in all likelihood. But my expectations for Ben DiNucci were not realized in this game, and I wonder how you felt about his performance.
Well, you know, this is a guy that I had gotten several phone calls from, and hey, this guy can really sling it. He can sling it all over the yard. He's kind of got a swagger about him. He's got some Tony Romo-esque qualities about him. And you know how guys, and this is part of the scouting jargon, I mean, they try to kind of compare guys to one another. But let me just cut right to it, Ed. I didn't see anything tonight that I thought was any of those guys, resembled any of those guys. I, you know, having coached a position and understand how you've got to, in the NFL, you've got to throw guys open. You've got to be able to get on top of the football. And I'm talking about really spin the nose of the football in some tight windows. I saw a quarterback tonight with his hand underneath the football. I saw the ball sail time after time. I've been around some guys who, you know, we had to start Clint Sterner. We had to start some guys that, you know, Ryan Leaf. I mean, we had to start some guys that really, you know, you questioned, were they starting quarterbacks in the NFL? And I look at this guy and I'm like, oh my goodness. I mean, in theory, he should have thrown about four picks tonight. But, you know, he did do a good job at times of catching and getting rid of the football. But as far as did I see anything that would make me think this guy is a gunslinger or does he have any of those qualities? I didn't remotely see any of that tonight. And so, you know, that's the downside. The upside was that I saw Zach Martin, you know, get back into the game. I saw Biotis play more physical maybe than I've seen him play this year. And I'm sure that's with the confidence of knowing that you've got an all-pro guard, you know, on your right side. I mean, I saw him get some second-level blocks tonight and do some things that I haven't seen this team do in, you know, maybe a month. So you know, the fact that they were able to get some 6, 7, 8 yard runs, they were able to get Zeke up to the second level, and you know, or the Will linebacker would fall in at times, or get it blocked all the way to the safety. That's the positive side of what I saw offensively. I do think that Bell is getting better as a tight end. I see some upside with him. I see some feel from Dalton Schultz. I mean, I think he got, you know, he came in here and probably the, you know, Stanford guy that he is, studious guy that he is, you know, he spent some time as an understudy to Witten, and you can tell he understands how to set down in zone windows and in zone creases. He understands how to kind of run away and maneuver away and in man coverage. He knows how to create separation by getting on guys' feet. So those are kind of the good things that I saw offensively tonight. But I'm really afraid, Ed, if we have to line up, if the Cowboys have to line up again and put him out there as a starter, I think it could be – I mean, I really think it could be ugly. And you know, they did – again, they were imaginative tonight. I mean, the offensive staff, you know, they ran a few – reverses that worked. They ran a few that didn't work. I mean, we can be critical of that, but I thought they hung around the game offensively, you know, for a half just to make it where it was, you know, where it was at least not a blowout. Because I really thought this, and we talked about this before the game. I mean, I really thought this was going to be a blowout, but I did see some things from the offensive line, from the back, and from the tight ends that give me reason for, you know, reason to at least be able to swallow what was a tough loss.
But beyond watching Ben DiNucci's general ineffectiveness and his, I don't know, his odd idiosyncratic throwing style, I would say it's really troubling that your defense gets you 4 turnovers and you can't score a single touchdown in the game. And so as we transitioned taking a look at the defense, I thought – they were finally competitive in a game. I mean, obviously, Doug Peterson went into this game with, you know, Carson Wentz trying to attack the rookie corner, Trayvon Diggs, a second-round pick from Alabama, who's been challenged a little more in recent weeks. But, hey, he played pretty well. I mean, he made 2 interceptions. When's the last time a Cowboy had 2 interceptions in a game? They'd have 1 all year coming into the game.
Yeah.
I thought Leighton Vander Esch had some good moments in the game. We didn't see much of Sean Lee, which makes me think when I saw him limp off after his first series that he's hurt again. We'll find out more about that as the week evolves. I think DeMarcus Lawrence had a few good plays that we saw. What was your general overview of the defense?
Well, I agree with you. I'm a little concerned about Trayvon's makeup speed. I'm talking about when he initially gets beat off the line. Can his technique get a little better, maybe pressing that guy into the boundary? Probably so. I'm like you. I thought he did a great job of tracking that deep ball. I don't know what Wentz was doing, throwing that ball up, I mean, into that breeze. But they said it was a 20-mile-an-hour wind, and so he did a great job, Trayvon did, of tracking that ball. I thought Vander Esch showed you that he is, you know, he is the Mike linebacker of the future. I do think he reminds me a lot of Urlacher. I mean, I think he's long, he runs, he can cover, he can blitz. I mean, he blitzed and caused a sack fumble. I agree with you. I think DeMarcus Lawrence is finally healthy. I saw him, I think the best way I saw him tonight was they threw that little wide receiver screen to the short side. And he was running an inside stunt, stuck his foot in the ground, and still went and chased the receiver down for like a 2-yard gain. I mean, it was really impressive to see some guys flying around on that side of the ball. I'll say this. I saw some good things out of Randy Gregory. I mean, I'm impressed with how he's playing. Here's the downside. I don't know what is going on with Tyrone Crawford, but, I mean, he got rolled out of there multiple times. I'm not sure he's an inside player, a guy that can play down inside. Man, did he get rolled out of there a few times? And then, you know, I saw Wilson, played okay in the secondary. And then I thought one of the best plays of the night was when Anthony Brown went and attacked that ball and knocked it out of Ragor's hands right there at the end of the game. So I didn't see a team that gave up. They did continue to play hard. So I don't know if I want to say this was a game where they played better or Philadelphia and what Doug Peterson is doing offensively, boy, it is a real head scratcher. I mean, they were running the football at 6 and 7 yards a clip. They'd run it 6 yards, run it 5 yards, run it six, boot. I mean, why do you have to feel like you've got to throw the ball when you're doing some of those things? So I don't think Philadelphia is very good offensively. I think they're really almost a mess offensively. So I don't like, being able to say, well, I'm handicapping this as Philadelphia played bad defensively as much as I'm going to say. I thought the Cowboys made some – or offensively as much as I'm going to say, I thought the Cowboys made some plays on the defensive side of the ball, and you got to take your hat off to the two interceptions that Diggs was able to get.
So now we come to our final discussion point, which is the coaching. Like you mentioned, and I did off the top of the show, they were very creative offensively, which I think sent the message that they didn't think they could compete with the Eagles in playing their quarterback in a conventional way. I'm wondering just generally what you thought of the performance of this coaching staff. Mike McCarthy said it was definitely taking a step in the right direction, but here they are at 2-6 in the midpoint of a disastrous season. And it really was that way before Dak got hurt.
Yeah.
Not to the same extent, but
yeah,
there's a sense of hopelessness now, but
yeah. Ed, and I do, I mean, I mean, again, let's grade this the way we see it. The arrow moved a little bit in the right direction defensively. And I'm saying a little bit because I think you got better players on the field. And I'm saying that being Gregory Van Der Esch, I think a healthier DeMarcus Lawrence, I think a more experienced by the week, Trayvon Diggs. Am I ready to say that this scheme that they're playing has been fixed? Absolutely not. I still saw them get out leveraged tonight. I still think they have some issues schematically with what they're doing on that side of the football. So when we think about coaching, this is what I know. And I'm going to have you as a guy that, I mean, obviously I respect a lot and in the profession that you do. And I know that you know this, having been in the NFL as long and having covered all of the, what I would say are very adverse situations. You've covered the good times, you've covered the bad. But here's what, and again, I'm posing this as a question, or I'm really saying it, and I'm wanting you to give me the words of affirmation, which I look for a lot of times with you. But I think you know losing is contagious. Losing football games is contagious, just like winning is. And when you start losing football games over and over and week after week, I think it's very hard to stem the tide. And you know, that's my perception of what's going on here. This is a 2-6 football team that has still got Pittsburgh, Green Bay. They've got a pretty tough schedule.
Got to play the Ravens still.
Correct. Cincinnati won today, and Joe Burrow's playing better. They've got the Giants again. But, I mean, in theory, can you see this being more than a 3-win football team when you look at the second half of this schedule?
I think this team could be unique in the history of the Cowboys franchise because they've never had a 2-14 team. They've had a lot of different records. If they don't win another game, they're the first 2-14 team in franchise history, and I think that's infinitely possible. And to your point about how hard it is to change a losing mindset and culture, and it's hard to think that 2 months ago we were thinking this team was a Super Bowl contender, and they were never that, not even before Dak got injured, and they lost, you know, 4/5 of their offensive line, now 3/5. But, you know, they I thought they made moves this week to try to get the players' attention and to get a commitment from the players to play the way McCarthy wants them to play or the way Mike Nolan wants them to play by trading a defensive starter and waiving two defensive starters with comments, the public endorsements from both Jerry and Stephen Jones about Mike McCarthy being here well beyond this year to let the locker room know that they're going to be accountable to this coaching staff when this year ends. And I'm wondering if any of that in your mind played into a better performance, or do you think it was just that the Eagles are that bad that, I mean, the Cowboys played worse on defense against the Giants. They played worse overall against Washington. Are those two teams better than the Eagles? Or maybe did some of these things that happened this week have an effect?
Well, I think you saw a defensive unit play more competitive. I saw some guys chasing the ball. I saw Jordan Lewis could make a couple good open field tackles. Do I think cutting Dontari Poe in the corner, Worley, do I think that made a difference? Maybe. But I also think Philadelphia is bad offensively. They're bad. They're a bad football team, and they're leading the NFC East. I mean, that's the maddening thing.
I believe the new playoff probability puts them at 67% to win the division and go to the playoffs.
Yeah, that's just. I mean, and they're not a good football team. So I think when you look overall, you look at this football team and at 2-6. It bothers me that, they're not more polished from a defensive standpoint. You're not going to win with a third quarterback in the NFL. That's just a fact. I didn't expect them to win tonight. I expected them to get absolutely shellacked. And the fact that they didn't, you know, has me come on here and say, I did see some guys playing hard. You look for the positive in those situations. And I'm sure as a coaching staff, I thought it was very unique that they snapped that ball over the punt Chris Jones's head. And then they had a very unique onside kick that they almost got.
They've got the most imaginative onside kicks in football.
Yeah. I mean, and I mean to see Zerlein hit that field goal before the half that looked like one of your hooded seven irons that you hit over there at Jaws's golf tournament. I thought that was pretty
longest good. Field goal in the NFL this year.
Yeah. I mean, so now I'm almost wanting to say Zerline's made the two best plays of the Cowboys season so far.
The watermelon kick
against Atlanta and the, in that field goal there. But, Ed, I really believe here. I mean, I know you got me on here to grade. I did see some, in summation here, I saw some better things defensively. I'm very concerned if Andy Dalton can't come back for a few more weeks. I just think you're going to see some really, really ugly football. And if you're a Cowboy fan, it's going to be a hard pill to swallow this second half of the football season.
Well, and to your point, looking forward as we finish up this podcast, we try to look at what's coming up. And you mentioned Andy Dalton and coming back from the concussion. Do you want him coming back against the Pittsburgh Steelers, who lead the NFL in sacks Now, they lost Cam Hayward to a knee injury late in the game, so we don't know what his status might be for next Sunday at Jerry World. But the Steelers are one of the great blitz teams in all of football, and you would certainly think that Dalton's experience against them would be helpful. He played against them twice a year when he's with the Bengals in the AFC North. Of course, he's lost seven straight times to them. The Steelers are the last undefeated team in the entire NFL. The last 2 weeks, they've beaten the 5-0 Titans and the 5-1 Ravens. The last time the Steelers started 7-0, 1978, when they went to win the third of their four Super Bowls in the 1970s. So the Cowboys have their hands full on Sunday, regardless of which quarterback they're playing. The current version of the Steelers, as you well know, Stretch, are the fourth team since 1990 to have 30 sacks and 10 interceptions through their first seven games of the season. So a very formidable defensive team with Ben Roethlisberger back leading the offense. That's what's up next for the Cowboys. We thank you, Stretch, for making your usual great contribution to the Doomsday Podcast. We hope to have Matt Mosley back soon. I should update you quickly on his status. He underwent spinal fusion surgery earlier in the week and was released to continue his recovery at home this weekend. So progress being made on that front. We certainly look forward to having Matt Mosley back with us as soon as possible and hope you'll join us next week after the Steelers and Cowboys play to start the second half of their NFL season. And until then, we say goodnight, North Texas.